It is Friday, January 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, North Korea accepts South Korea's offer of high-level talks. Iran government supporters hold large rallies as the UN Security Council prepares to meet to discuss recent unrest. And singer Justin Timberlake issues a new single. It's all ahead. North Korea has accepted South Korea's offer of high-level talks next Tuesday, January 9th, at the truce village of Panmunjom in the heavily fortified demilitarized zone dividing the two Koreas. According to South Korea's Unification Ministry on Friday morning, North Korea sent a message saying it would accept Seoul's offer to meet at the border village to discuss Olympic cooperation and how to improve overall ties. I spoke with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb about the coming talks.
Well, we know that North Korea is interested in sending a delegation of some sort to the Olympics in South Korea. We know that that's kind of the starting point, the springboard for these talks. And we know that the North and South also are interested in security issues. We don't think they're actually going to come to any sort of agreement or conclusion on these issues, but we do know that they both want to kind of make their point on either side and see where they can move forward in the future.
Well, now, this announcement came after the U.S. and South Korea have decided to delay joint military exercises, you know, until after the Winter Olympics next month. These military exercises are usually always heavily criticized by North Korea.
Absolutely, and we were just speaking to U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis here at the Pentagon yesterday, and he was downplaying the delay to reporters here. He called the delay a practical matter. He said that the exercises would resume after the Paralympic Games. Those are going to be held March 9th through 18th. And he didn't give a specific date or anything, but these are massive exercises. Exercise Full Eagle is what it's called, and we're not just talking about tens of thousands of troops. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of troops with the U.S. and the South Korea delegations working together. They're working together on naval exercises, ground exercises, special operations. So it's a very intensive exercise. It's one of the biggest in the world, and for them to push that down the road made sense, according to Secretary Mattis, because with everything going on with the Olympics, a lot of the military that would need to be helping out with security for the exercises are going to be doing the security for the Olympics. So it kind of just made sense there, and it also left an opening for dialogue between the North and the South.
Yes. Also, this decision comes following a number of tweets by President Donald Trump, very highly critical, if not personally critical, of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. You know, some observers have said that this almost leaves an opening for perhaps greater dialogue between the North and South Korea, which, of course, South Korea is a significant ally of the U.S.
That's right. It's so interesting to look at it the way with Donald Trump, the president of the United States, actually trying to, in a way, discourage the experts he used in quotations, weighing in on talks and dialogue. That is actually kind of playing to the advantage because Kim Jong-un, they've had almost an internet back and forth for the entire year of Donald Trump's presidency. So it's almost like reverse psychology in a way that Kim Jong-un would want to do something against what Donald Trump would say. But at the same time, Donald Trump can then come in and take credit for his strong stance. And that is something that here at the Pentagon, Secretary Mattis said that the international stance on North Korea is the reason for these talks. He says his exact quotes were something to the effect of, "I would not even be thinking about these talks without the months and months of international pressure and the three unanimous decisions by the United Nations to condemn North Korea and to put sanctions on North Korea for their behavior over the past year."
That's VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
You know, there's something fascinating going on out in social media. And unlike other times, I'm not going to be quoting from tweets or Facebook posts or that sort of thing. I do just want to note what is an unusual and sensitive discussion that's happening out there. It's been spurred in part by Michael Wolff's book, which you've talked about, Fire and Fury, where in he basically says that the president is exhibiting the first signs of dementia. He talks about that the president used to, within 30 minutes, he'd repeat word for word or expression for expression the same sort of idea or phrase. It's now down to 10 minutes. He also notes that at the New Year's Eve party, the president failed to recognize some very old friends. He just didn't recognize them when they were coming in. And other people are pointing to this. And what's fascinating, I think, is this is obviously a fraught and a delicate discussion. Medical doctor and journalist James Hamblin in The Atlantic writes about, you know, the dangers of trying to diagnose somebody from afar. Now, I'm not a medical doctor. He is, and he won't even do it. Other doctors won't do it. It's something that is sort of roughly called the Goldwater Rule. But interestingly, this is being discussed at not just on the web, but also at high levels in the government. It was recently revealed that a number of lawmakers on the Hill, not identified who, but a bipartisan group, asked a Yale psychiatrist, to come in and address the president's mental health. So unlike a lot of other internet discussions, this one is actually not full of vitriol, but just kind of proceeding, I think, delicately.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor, Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. The U.S. places Pakistan on a special watch list for severe violations of religious freedom. Ethiopia will consider pardoning some members of opposition political parties. The Catalan leader will remain in custody, and Turkey gives weapons to Somali soldiers. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists in Chile have found a new heart failure treatment that uses umbilical cord-derived stem cells may lead to remarkable improvements in heart muscle function and quality of life for those suffering from this condition. The American Heart Association says heart failure means that your heart isn't pumping blood as it should and is unable to keep up with the body's need for blood and oxygen. Heart failure is usually treated with medication and changes in lifestyle. The researchers found that a year after heart failure patients were given this new treatment, they showed a significant and continued improvement in their heart's ability to pump blood and had an improved quality of life. They also found the treatment was safe with no adverse effects. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at the suspension of U.S. assistance to Pakistan. Pro-government supporters held large rallies Friday across Iran as the United Nations Security Council prepares to hold an emergency meeting to discuss the ongoing unrest. Thousands of government advocates rallied for a third straight day in dozens of locations around Tehran and several cities after Tehran's prayer leader, Ahmad Khatami, urged authorities to deal firmly with those responsible for sparking more than a week of rallies that have killed 22 people and led to the arrest of more than 1,000 others. Iranian officials say a plot by the CIA, Israel, and Saudi Arabia is responsible for the unrest amid escalating tensions with the neighboring countries since Donald Trump won the United States presidency. James Jeffrey, a distinguished fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, who's a former diplomat, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the final decision on how the government will deal with the protests rests ultimately with the supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei.
President Rouhani has spoken out But more significantly, the Supreme Leader Khamenei has also spoken out, but they took different tacks. Khamenei said that this was all the fault of foreign agents, mainly the United States and, of course, Saudi Arabia, whereas Rouhani tried to take a gentler and kinder approach on the right to protest. But at the end of the day, it will be the Supreme Leader and the armed fist of the revolution, which is the Revolutionary Guards, that will be called upon to deal with this. Now, they've got a very diffuse, broad problem that is deeply entrenched in the population. That's what we've seen. This is not likely to overthrow the regime, but it's going to create very significant problems.
There are some that view this as a short-term event, that it will die down. Do you think there's the possibility that these could be prolonged protests?
I think that depending upon how smart or stupid the government is and how lucky they are, these could go on a while or they could eventually fade away. But the underlying sentiment is broadly shared in the population. They have not participated in the economic growth of the country. They see their country involved in all of these foreign adventures in Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, Iraq, Afghanistan, you name it. And they don't see any benefit to them of that. And there's clearly a major disappointment with the Rouhani leadership. He won in an almost landslide a little over a year ago.
President Trump has been rather vocal in his support of the demonstrators. Is that wise, given the relative amount of anti-U.S. sentiment there is in Iran?
So far, so good. If I had to pick the best moment in the Trump presidency for foreign policy, it would be this, including the president himself. First of all, he has avoided what President Obama did, which was to simply ignore it. He has called out the government for using oppression, using violence against the protesters, broadly supported the protesters. But what he hasn't done is to put American support behind them or in any way indicate that we're going to intervene in any way to try to overthrow the regime. So by the standards of 2009, when President Obama said nothing, I think he gets good marks.
Reuters is quoting a senior Trump administration official as saying the U.S. is trying to collect actionable information that could allow it to pursue sanctions against Iranian individuals and organizations that are involved in the crackdown.
That is absolutely my belief. You can cite me on that as well.
James Jeffrey, a distinguished fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. The United States is suspending security assistance to Pakistan's army until it takes decisive action against the Afghan Taliban and the Haqqani network. I spoke with VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching about the U.S. decision, and I asked her what kind of aid has been suspended.
The United States will not deliver military equipment or transfer security-related funds to Pakistan. However, exceptions could be made on a case-by-case basis if they are for critical national security interests. The U.S. assistance to Pakistan could be put into three broad categories. The first one is military aid, which is focused on counterterrorism and includes foreign military financing, or FMF. It's about $255 million, and international military education and training, or IMET, it's about $5 million. Then there are also coalition support funds, or CSF, and civilian assistance. Thursday's announcement to suspend military security assistance was suspending FMF and CSF, but not IMET and not civilian assistance. The logic is the United States still view Pakistan as an important country in South Asia and wants to see a stable and prosperous nation there. But because of the concern that they are not providing enough support to fight terrorist network and they are allowing anti-India groups to operate, so business cannot be conducted as usual. That said, however, this assistance is suspended but not canceled for good. If United States feel that Pakistan is taking decisive action against terrorists, then Washington will resume the funding.
Well, does this action follow President Trump's New Year's Day tweet in which he threatened to cut funding for Pakistan and he accused Pakistan of giving safe haven to terrorists and playing U.S. leaders for fools?
That's what we are asking here at the State Department because of the timing of the announcement. It follows right after President Trump's tweet, as you mentioned. And State Department seemed to scramble to put together an announcement about the suspension without providing a concrete, tangible dollar value of the assistance suspension and without providing more details. What the senior State Department officials are telling us are this has been an ongoing conversation, not only within the United States interagency, but also with Pakistan. They told us Pakistan is aware of United States concerns. Officials citing the recent visits by Secretary of State Tillerson and Secretary of Defense Mattis to Pakistan, and therefore they think they should not be surprised. Pakistan.
Well, what about the impact that this action could have on the South Asia security situation in general? Pakistan borders India, Afghanistan, Iran, and China, all highly significant countries globally.
What the U.S. is saying is Washington needs Pakistan to succeed in South Asia because it is a critical country. It is about to become the fifth largest country in the world, and it will become a nuclear-armed country.
That's VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA. Every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Is pop icon Justin Timberlake going country? Well, Nikki Strong of VOA Music shares what the country music community thinks of Timberlake's forthcoming album, Man of the Woods. So, Nikki, do country music lovers really believe that this album is for them?
That is a great question. There's a wide range of taste in the country music community, but all of us are excited about the idea of this album having potentially being country. He's never been shy about his Memphis upbringing and his roots, and he's always been considered one of us, even though he's a pop star. And then back in 2013, and this is when all of this buzz started happening, he gave an interview where he said he expressed aspirations of winning a Best Country Album of the Year award.
Oh.
Yeah, since then, he moved to Nashville. He presented at the ASCAP Country Awards to honor Trisha Yearwood. That was a major appearance. And then he had this phenomenal appearance and performance that he did with Chris Stapleton at the CMA Awards. They did a mashup of Drink You Away by Timberlake and then Stapleton's version of Tennessee Whiskey. And everybody was like, oh, my goodness, that was amazing. And they were like, he's got to be doing a country album. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. And then in relation to this album, Timberland has hinted that it's country, the producer. Little Big Town has a co-writing credit on it. Chris Stapleton is on it. So, and Timberlake's been saying, you know, it's inspired by where he's from, which is Memphis. So
there is a new trailer, too, that was just released.
Yeah, so that also plays into it. I mean, I think the trailer is hilarious. I think it really traffics in country stereotypes. You know, it's like Justin near a bonfire, Justin on a cliff. You know, there's horses, you know, Justin being pensive in nature. I think on one shot, he's wearing a motorcycle jacket with fringe. Another shot, I see him wearing a plaid shirt. I'm just like, you know, it's subtle, but it's all there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay. And then it's called Man of the Woods. Now, I know, I think it comes from his son's name, Silas, which is of the woods. But still, you know, you can't be man of the city if you're going to be an authentic country artist. And sonically, the trailer, it starts off, it has a rootsy kind of feel to it. You know, I was like, do I hear a fiddle, perhaps? Now,
Will the album have a synthesized, you know, banjo looped over a hip-hop beat? I don't know. That remains to be seen.
Timbaland is producing it.
Yes, and Timbaland is known as, you know, a hip-hop producer, hip-hop R&B. I mean, he doesn't necessarily have an extensive track record of producing country music per se, but the work that he and Justin Timberlake have done in the past is great. They have a phenomenal synergy. So, you know, we don't know if the album is going to be a country album, whether there'll be country songs on it, whether it'll be overall, you know, be influenced by country music. I don't know, because a bonfire can definitely sound like a hip hop beat. But I think it'll be good. I think it's going to be a good album because those two together do really nice work. The charts, now I think this is interesting. I'm sensing that it's being marketed to both country and pop, which will then help him on the charts, on both of those charts, so which will then inform airplay and sales, etc. So February 2nd is when it drops, Man of the Woods. That's when it will be released into the wild, wild west of radio airplay and streaming and country sales. So we'll find out then how country the album actually is.
The first single, Fresh Leaves, drops January 5th, and the album Man of the Woods by Justin Timberlake hits stores February 2nd. If it sounds country, you may very well hear them on VOA 1's Country Hits with Nikki Strong. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
I didn't waste it, 'cause there's nothing like your love to give me high.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and Germany have spoken out concerning the recent conviction and sentencing of two Chinese human rights activists. In a joint statement, the embassies of Germany and the United States said they are deeply disappointed that Chinese human rights defender and blogger Wu Gan and Chinese attorney Xie Yang have been convicted on vague charges of subverting state power and that Wu has been sentenced to 8 years in prison. We call on the Chinese authorities to release Wu immediately, the statement continued. As Xie has been exempted from punishment, we urge China to allow Xie to resume his professional activities without preconditions and be free of any restrictions. The joint statement noted that for many years Xie Yang has helped fellow Chinese citizens defend their rights under Chinese law. He was among those lawyers and other rights defenders, including Wu Gan, targeted by Chinese authorities in the so-called 709 crackdown that began in July 2015. Wu was held in pretrial detention for more than 2 years and denied access to independent legal counsel until December 9, 2016. Xie was held incommunicado for 6 months before being charged, then was jailed for 18 months longer before appearing at an unannounced trial in May. During the trial, Xie read a scripted confession that directly contradicted his previous signed statement describing how he was treated while in detention. The court appointed an attorney to represent Xie and barred him from choosing his own counsel after authorities detained his original attorney in May 2017. In light of the allegations of serious mistreatment of Wu Gan and Xie Yang while in detention and Xie's public confession on state media, the joint statement read, we call on the Chinese authorities to adhere to procedures established by law and respect China's international human rights obligations and commitments. We urge Chinese authorities to view lawyers and rights defenders as partners in strengthening Chinese society through development of the rule of law. The United States and Germany, the statement said, also continue to call for the immediate release of Wang Guangchang, who has been held in detention and denied access to independent legal counsel for over 2 years. Nothing subverts a state more than injustice and repression. The rights of the people of China to express dissent should be respected.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.